On this episode, we discuss The Fanatic.
For anyone who thought Joker was too nuanced and smart.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
Wow, Dan, it's me, Stuart Wellington.
And over here in Los Angeles, Elliot Kalin. I'm going to apologize ahead of time. I have a little bit of a cough, so if you hear any coughing, that is my throat manufacturing phlegm for me to expectorate into the open air in order to spread the contagion that's inside me, because that's how it reproduces from body to body.
And thank you for that health warning, Elliot, but I think we need to get right to the meat of this sandwich. That's right. We're not alone in this universe or this world. We are not alone on this podcast either, because we are joined today by a special someone, a someone who is on the podcast's Hey there from the Magic Tavern.
Hey there from the Magic Tavern.
No, that's wrong. That's our casual spinoff.
hey there from the Magic Tavern. Hello from the Magic Tavern. And hey, Riddle Riddle. That's right. Adil Rafai has joined us. Hey there, Adil.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'll be your little cinema boy.
Oh boy.
Is that a term? Cinema boy?
No, I mean, it's a term I've never heard before, and yet the minute I heard it, I instantly understood every aspect of the relationship. So.
Is that a Neil Young B-side, Cinema Boy?
Uh-huh. It's certainly a better title for this podcast.
I found it startlingly erotic. So.
that's the blurb that's going to be on that word. Yeah. Startlingly erotic, says Dan McCoy, of the word Cinema Boy, okay. B-O-I.
So thanks for joining us, Adil.
Thanks for having me.
We brought you in, you know, as Elliot mentioned in the intro, this is a movie directed by Fred Durst, the vocalist for new metal band Limp Bizkit. And you insisted that we have you on because you're a huge Limp Bizkit fan, right?
100%. I thought it was the absolute correct move for Fred Durst to parlay his musical fame 14 years later into directing one of the worst movies of all time. And also, you should direct, if your name rhymes with Dead Worst, you should always direct. Always direct.
Well, I remember reading an interview with Fred Durst years ago, the first time he announced that he was going to direct a movie, and I think that one didn't get off the ground. And he said in the interview, the reason I made a band was so I could direct music videos, so I could start directing movies. And it's like, that's a real roundabout path to becoming a film director, Fred. It seems he made it happen.
God bless him.
He did make it happen. Good point. Yeah.
It's like in that movie, Funny People, where Adam Sandler's character becomes a super famous movie star so he can beat cancer, right?
Yeah, that's how that movie works, sure. Because when Death shows up to take him away, he goes, wait, are you Adam Sandler? Can I get your autograph on my scythe?
That's not his character's name in the movie,
Nicky.
Though, right?
Yeah. His character's name is Little Nicky.
So this is a podcast where we watch a bad movie and then we talk about it. We didn't say that up front. We didn't reset the premise.
No,
but I'm doing it.
That's
now.
Okay, Dan. The podcast has only been going for a couple minutes. I don't think people are wandering around the streets confused. Not sure if there's a god or
no,
not.
No, no, no. I just knew that about. Within seconds you'd start berating me for not having said that. So I was trying to cut that off.
Sketching out all our characters now.
Yeah.
Now, Dan, I don't want to be your therapist for a moment, even though I should be your therapist. I'm very good at it. But do you think you're projecting on me? The inner Dan that would be berating you
for listeners, Dan is laying on a couch. Elliot is behind him with a sketch pad.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That I'm just drawing pictures of Dan's hair.
Clicking a pin.
He's drawing me like one of his French curls. no, so we watched this movie, as you said, directed by Fred Durst, starring Mr. John Travolta, who's having a bad time lately.
Star of Gotti, John Travolta.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And he's best known for such films as Phenomenon, Lucky Numbers, you know, those movies.
Yeah. This movie had something like a $6,000 per screen average. It was an incredible flop.
I mean, I think it was like, yeah, I think it...
3,000?
Let's take a look.
Let's look it up.
I've got it right in front of me. The entire domestic box office in theaters was $3,153. Yeah. I mean, $6,000 per screen is not that bad.
That would be good, actually.
No, from
more
52
like
theaters.
More like shoebox office.
Whoa. Oh, shit. All we know is the opening day, and from 52 theaters, it earned $3,100 and some odd dollars. So
okay, well,
not
yeah, I mean,
great.
I bought out at least one whole theater of two seats
for your birthday party. You're like, my I'm birthday so party. Excited to see yep. this movie.
Sadly,
you're like, I'm a fanatic. I yeah. gotta see this.
Yeah, and the sad thing was, I just went by myself. I bought the second seat to hold my popped corn. Right, guys, you got to get a big old bucket of popcorn.
What? I like you called it popped corn. Yeah, like a 30s
big old bucket.
Why are you like trying to encourage us to back you up on the idea that popcorn is an appropriate movie snack?
It's so salty. It's good, right?
Yeah. And Stuart, you famously bought stock in concessions.
Uh-huh. I bought stockings at the concession stand.
This movie theater has everything.
Mm-hmm. Well,
to be fair.
They have legs, eggs.
You bought those stockings because you thought it was a giant egg. You were like, an ostrich egg? This is exotic. Uh-huh. And then you opened it and there were stockings inside.
Uh-huh. They were wrapped around a duck egg.
I'm kind of sad. Like,
why are you sad, Dan?
I don't know. I just, like, I mean, obviously, I don't, well, not obviously. Who knows? Maybe I need pantyhose. But
for
like,
listeners, Dan is still on the couch. He's now projecting about his dad.
I don't personally wear pantyhose, but, like, my mom used to have, like, those legs, eggs. And I
wow,
thought
this
really
is a therapy session. Talking about his mom's legs.
I just thought they were fun, you know?
And her eggs.
It is
a little
fun.
Plastic egg.
No, what I love
about
it is
I'm not
going to
say it's not fun.
They continue the confusion about eggs that culture has always had, where they're like, do bunnies lay eggs? Uh-huh. And when you open the eggs, there are pantyhose inside?
Yeah.
I guess so. Mother Nature is crazy.
Life finds a way.
These pantyhose were all supposed to be women,
guys,
but now they're reproducing.
Speaking of life finds a way, like this is, we're
are you suggesting that if maybe they extracted DNA out of a mosquito, they might be able to bring back the legs eggs?
Yeah.
It's the only way we can do it. I guess call up BD Wong and see if he can get to work on that in the lab.
I apologize for further delaying the movie, but I have to tell you guys, I went to see the Jurassic World Live tour last night. At the Barclays Center.
So
yeah, that's why Adol's in town, right? You play the Tyrannosaur.
I famously play Jeff Velociraptor.
Wow.
The titular Velociraptor.
No, it's like...
I mean, well, wait a minute. The title is not Velociraptors. There is no titular Velociraptor.
Well, there's parentheses.
unless the name of the stage show is Jurassic Park, The Adventures of Jeff Velociraptor, which it could be. I didn't see it. Now, Dan,
it
tell
was
us more.
Until
this
my
Barclays
incident, yeah.
This Barclays Center is some sort of arena?
Yeah. It's
Where's that located?
It's an arena in Brooklyn.
Okay, interesting.
And so they put on the show.
How's the parking?
I mean, guys, you're delaying some pretty sweet stuff.
Okay.
This is where the Nets play?
Yes, this is where the Nets play. Now, they've converted it to Isla Nublar or whatever,
yep.
Isla Sorna, whichever
yep.
one it is.
Indina Menzel.
Pronounced like a true white man. Yes, continue.
So it's basically a stunt show with dinosaurs, and the plot is just, you know, stringing together reasons to get from one
now,
dinosaur
wait,
thing.
Daniel, you have, okay, you really opened a lot of question worms.
Sure.
There. So it's a stunt show with dinosaurs. So there are real dinosaurs performing
well,
stunts?
I'm going to get to that. So... It is a story about, you know, how they have to go back to these new characters have to go back to the island with their, like, trained dinosaur. It's not a velociraptor. I don't know what it is. It's kind of like a velociraptor. It's, like, got a thinner neck. Maybe Elliot knows. But,
I didn't see the show. There could be any number
of dinosaurs. They
have
to go back to rescue her eggs. But, of course, Engine, the evil Engine, wants the eggs too. Doesn't really matter what's going on, except for there's a bunch of, like, punching and motorcycles going around and along with the dinosaurs. But it's these...
Again, these dinosaurs, Dan. How are
I'm
they...
I'm
going
to get to the dinosaurs. Before that, though, I want to say there's like two adult scientists and then there are two interns that they take along for some reason
mm-hmm.
on this dinosaur adventure. And one of the interns is like this kid who like keeps like dancing and dabbing all the time and wants to like live stream his thing. Like it is playing to the rafters, this kid. And
playing
to the
raptors?
Raptors?
To the raptors.
Yeah. So there are raptors in the rafters?
And mm-hmm. it's one of these
Seems
things.
Very dangerous.
Yeah, the Toronto Raptors are sitting in the rafters.
It's one of these
They're
shows where
for the game.
People are enraptured.
It's one of these shows where all the dialogue is pre-recorded, and so the actors are just miming along to
That's
this pre-recorded
awesome.
Dialogue, and they have to mime as big as they can so everyone can see what their emotion is at any time. But anyway, the dinosaurs.
Okay.
The Raptors are basically...
Keeping in mind that this is a podcast about the movie Fanatic, and we are going to record like a mini episode of the Flophouse afterwards, which would be the perfect time to go into detail about the Jurassic Park live show.
No, no, no. I feel like this is main feed. This is main line.
The dinosaurs. So the Velociraptors look pretty good, because they're like those kind of puppets that... Like a guy's inside and walking around, but they like make the legs look like Velociraptor legs. That's great. Fine with that. But then like...
So wait. These legs. These are legs that came out of an egg.
Yes. These are legs that came out of an egg because they're Velociraptor legs. But then they would have like a Stegosaurus come out and it would be basically like barely moving its legs, barely moving its arms. It would just be on this like cart.
Well, Stegosauruses don't have arms. Continue.
barely moving its legs, barely moving its head, but it was on this like cart on a track that would like go around the stadium, and it was at that moment that they were like,
the majesty of this.
Yeah, the big sweat
it's
music.
Amazing. You know, and then the T-Rex comes out at the end and everyone's happy.
Yeah, but Laura Dern reprised her role.
Laura Dern
right?
was there. Oscar winner Laura Dern.
Yeah, and Phoenix Suns gorilla was there.
Sorry?
Phoenix Suns gorilla was there and Dunkosaurus.
Yeah, yeah. They did have a scene. They did have a scene at the end where they had flamethrowers trying to like, you know, scare the T-Rex. So
okay, sounds pretty cool.
There were flamethrowers and a T-Rex on stage, and I'm like, this is the best type of entertainment.
Yeah.
I really like the idea of Laura Dern having booked that tour, not thinking she was going to win an Oscar for Marriage Story, and now she did, and she's like, oh, I wish I could take movie roles, but instead I'm stuck on the Jurassic Park live tour.
Yeah.
But the thing is, she's inside one of the Velociraptor puppets. That's the role that she took.
Yeah. All right.
So nobody even knows that it's her.
Sorry, I'm sorry for derailing. You just set it up so well, and I, you know, it was.
Well,
such
I mean, I think this is a movie that's about one man's obsession with Hollywood and excitement. And I think, you know, we got a little bit of that from your story, Dan.
Okay, well, let's move into the meat of the podcast.
Wait, Dan, on a scale from zero to cats, how excited have you been by this? Viewing
well,
experience.
I had a cold, so my excitement was lower than it should have been. But you know, like 7, maybe. I don't like. It's really dumb, but I was like walking out, and I was like, you know, this is for kids. Like that reminds me of the best. I mean,
this is famously also the stadium where you went to see the circus by yourself.
Yeah, but this is the best thing. I forgot at the end, like the tough guy is talking to the good dinosaur, being like. You know, you finally convinced me. Not all dinosaurs are bad. And this real, like, you son of a bitch kind of, like, voice. And then behind us, this little kid goes, aw, that is so sweet. So the target audience loved that dinosaur show.
That's nice. Okay, so that's the Flophouse. Thank you so much for listening to us today.
Yeah, so we've been brought to you by, I guess, dinosaurs.
Okay, so the Fanatic, guys, let's get to what we're actually talking about today. So, the Fanatic begins, as all great movies do, with a title card quoting one of its own characters.
Oh, real quick, Adel, just interrupt Elliot as much as possible. That's kind of how we do things.
Oh, great, yeah.
Don't be afraid to just jump in and
let
throw
me just say that
the
Fanatic answers the question, what would happen if Rain Man was a horror film?
I mean, Rain Man is a great name for a horror film.
Yeah.
Because it's like a serial killer who is executed out in the rain, and then he turns his body into rain, and he gets people all wet, and then they slip and die.
Or like they're killer raindrops, and people are like, have you heard the legend of the Rain Man? Aw, that's just an old story. I don't believe in that kid stuff. But then the rain starts killing people.
Isn't that basically the plot of the movie in Bowfinger, Chubby Rain?
Oh, that's fair.
They have like aliens coming down in the rain?
Aliens are invading Earth by hiding in drops of rain, right? Okay. And it's different than the movie Heavy Rain, which is just like a flood and there's a bank heist, right?
Yeah, and Christian Slater going around on a jet ski.
And Elliot, how is it different from the video game Hard Rain?
Mm-hmm.
Hard Rain, because I don't really remember Hard Rain that well.
Okay. And how is it different from the Bob Dylan
song,
Hard Rain's
Gonna Fall? I thought it was
Heavy Rain. Is it Heavy Rain?
It's Heavy Rain.
What about Black Rain with Michael Douglas?
And how is it different from Rain Wilson?
Well, that's because he's a person, and Purple Rain is also a movie, but that's about a different guy. And
how's it different from Rain of Fire?
And well, that's spelled differently. That's not rain like rain falling from the sky.
I don't think so. I mean, it is raining dragons, Elliot.
It's raining dragons. Hallelujah.
Okay, so The Fanatic opens with a quote from Hunter Dunbar about how he's nothing without his fans. You're like, who's Hunter Dunbar? Let me do a quick Google search. Oh, that's not a real person. It's a fictional character. Let's move on with the movie. And we open with a tough, cynical VO from this lady who we'll learn later is a paparazzo named Leah, no last name given, about how Los Angeles is the city of bullshitters, and it wrecks people. And I gotta say, guys, I have been living that experience. I am a shell of a man because this city of lies has chewed me up and spit me out. Want me to tell you more about it?
No. Yeah, I mean...
Mercy!
I look at you and I see the sunken eyes of Jake Gyllenhaal in Nightcrawler.
Oh, yeah. Well, now that I came out here to be a big-time TV writer, but now I find myself having the job of having to go around and kill people's pets in the middle of the night just to earn enough money to keep my family under a bridge. That's Los Angeles for you. Fame. Ain't it a bitch?
Now, anyway, Elliot, on a yes. scale of slightly to not at all, how essential is this narration to the movie?
I would call it... How non-essential can it get?
Yeah.
Not only would you not notice if the narration was gone from the movie, at times I forgot there was narration in the movie, and then Leah's voice would pop up again, and I'd be like, oh, right, I forgot.
Now, so do you think there's going to be a cut where they just remove the narration, like a reverse Blade Runner director's cut thing or whatever? Or was it a non-reverse Blade Runner's director cut thing? I can't remember which one.
It was a regular director's cut.
Which is the one? But which is the one that where was it? The original theatrical release. They wanted it, right?
Voiceover to clarify.
The studio one. They wanted a voiceover in Blade Runner merely because the movie is incomprehensible without it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a series of beautiful images not linked by a coherent story. But this is more of a double Dutch Blade Runner in that it is ugly to look at and also has a narration and also the story is kind of dumb. So anyway, the real carrot, the real star of the film, is Moose. Played by John Travolta. And Leah's like, he's unbreakable. We first meet him riding his moped, and we learn he's a big horror movie fan. And also, it's pretty clear that he has, a different way of interacting.
Yeah, can we go up front? Like, we've dealt with movies that portray characters with, emotional problems and learning disabilities, and clearly Moose has something going on.
Yeah, he's got... sort of developmental issue.
I just want to point out that at no point are we making fun. Do we want to make light of that or make fun of people that actually are struggling with anything like that?
Yeah, making fun of bad acting,
anything
else.
Yeah.
Because
insensitive scripting.
I mean, Travolta is putting his all into this character, and I can only imagine that in his mind, he is doing
nailing
something.
It.
Yeah, he's
sensitive and noble.
He is Sam,
but. What happens in the movie is you see this sort of like terribly offensive depiction of a person who's struggling with some sort of problem.
He is I assume meant to be somewhere on the autism spectrum.
Yeah.
And again, we do not make light of anyone with that. I don't know, with that way of living. Like, I know lots of people who are in different places on that spectrum, and they all live their lives, and none of them ride around on a moped pretending to be an English Bobby and demanding that movie stars sign their leather jackets. So So he goes to his pal who runs a memorabilia store, and he's so excited because his favorite actor, Hunter Dunbar, who as far as we can tell from the evidence given in the movie is a bad actor who makes crap, is going to be signing at... He's supposed to go to a party that Hunter Dunbar is at later, and he's going to be signing at the store tomorrow night, and the store guy cuts him a break and sells him the very leather vest emblazoned with the name Rico in sequins on the back that Hunter wore in the movie Space Vampires.
Mm-hmm.
So right off the bat, this feels like...
Elliot
was
pausing
by...
for laughter.
It feels like a movie made by people who haven't actually seen real movies because they're like, oh, yeah, he wore that in Space Vampires. And I'm like, so is he supposed to make garbage or is he supposed to be like famous and rich? Because he's got a big, wealthy house, but all of his movies sound like direct-to-VOD movies, right?
Yeah.
And doesn't this scene open with Travolta saying something like, I don't have a lot of time, I gotta poop? Is that the...
Yes, poo. I think so.
Drop the pee.
Poo. Okay, I'm sorry.
Sillier.
Well, that's to add a ticking clock to make some suspense for the scene.
Well, Uncut Gems. Stuart recognized that Hunter Dunbar famously won for 1992 Best Makeup, and what was the other? He's not an actor.
They're looking through it. He's like later on when Moose invades his home and is taking pictures of his let's say, modest collection of trophies. One one of them is for best makeup. The other is for like best stunt work. Stunt. Yeah. And I'm like,
supporting actress.
Yeah. Best original song.
Moose goes home and he's practicing in the mirror something that he can say to Hunter Dunbar. Again, can we take a moment to talk about what a fakey sounding name Hunter Dunbar is? Because it sounds like it sounds like a character who thinks that he's really cool, but really he's the heir to like a candy fortune. Like, and that's what I kept thinking was like, what is a Dunbar? Like, what did that name make you feel like? Did you feel like, oh, this is a tough, cool action star?
Well, he's played by Devon Sawa.
So?
Who people remember best, of course, from Little Giants.
Who people probably remember best from the first Final Destination and perhaps Idle Hands, I don't know, depending on...
And the Stan music video?
Yeah, he is kind of jacked in this, but I can't take him seriously as, like, a menacing figure because of my associations with him.
I'm merely asking about the name Hunter Dunbar.
Okay.
Were you like, oh, this guy sounds badass.
I mean, Hunter immediately makes it seem that he's badass. Although I would think that Moose would be frightened of him because don't hunters hunt mooses?
Oh.
We'll see.
You know what? Forget everything I was going to say. This movie's brilliant.
So when I previewed that joke for you earlier, Adol,
I said I would laugh, and I forgot.
Yeah, I was expecting a bigger reaction.
I mean, I think we're all just stunned by the realization that that probably is what
that's
probably
what they're going for.
Yeah, pupils were dilating.
and he's named Dunbar. Because when Moose goes to the party, he is done at the bar. Because in the only funny joke in the movie, he asks for a milkshake with real ice cream in it. And the bartender is like, oh, we don't have that.
Oh, man, and that was great. As a bartender, I can't tell you the number of times I have to deal with a situation like that. And I'm just like, the whole goal, all of my training is designed around how to massage a customer from their initial desire, which is, of course, a milkshake with real ice cream, to something that we do carry, like a milkshake without real ice cream.
So could you make a milkshake, but without do you have the other ingredients, or do you have
yes,
milk?
Yes, so I would pour some milk into a glass, and I would shake it in front of their face and be like, there you go, waka waka. I work in a Muppets-themed bar.
That's right. I forgot that you work at it. You work at Kermit's place.
Yeah. I don't know, like
get
cup of milk?
Fozzie Navel.
Yep.
Fozzie Navel.
Oh, that's pretty nice. Good. Yeah.
I would charge him like $3, $4. I don't know. It depends on how
I can't come up with other. The best I could come up with on short notice was Gonzoni, which is not very good.
Is that for macaroni?
No. Gonzoni is the machine they use to clean the ice after Gonzo's blood is splattered all over.
I felt like Gonzoni would be like
a Negroni
in a Muppets mob movie. That would be Gonzo's like mafioso name. Oh,
okay. Now, I wonder they should do a Muppets mob movie where it's Gonzoni. And they could call it the Dog Father. Ah, there you go. And it's Rolf.
Okay, let's keep going, shall we?
All right, Dan. Okay, let's talk about The Fanatic. That's way better.
Even
than
though
my Muppets
someone
Gangster
tweeted at
movie.
Me saying, "Why does Dan stop Elliot and Stu from making jokes?" Which is a good point, but at the same time, these two will talk not about the movie forever if I don't keep things rolling along.
So let's go through. Okay, so Moose, his friend, the paparazzi, has gotten him into a slick Hollywood party. Moose
and
is
by,
not there.
And by get into, she just pushes him over a fence. very soft garbage.
She asks him for a bolt cutter, but all he brought was a pair of scissors. She pushes him over a fence, and then she appears in the party later. And it's like, so did she jump over the fence too, or did she just walk in?
Well, yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Also, she's like paparazzi, right? That's her job? Like, it doesn't seem like she would be invited to be a guest at this Hollywood party.
No, that's why they're jumping over a fence, Dan. Uh-huh. She was not invited to be a guest.
Okay, but then she... All right.
And then he gets thrown out of that party, and we find out that she's, like, watching from the corner because that's her kink, I guess? I don't know.
So he has this awkward encounter with an actress he recognizes. He does not get thrown out for harassing her. He gets thrown out for having a backpack because no bags are allowed in the room, which was a strange reason for the security guard to throw him out of the building. But
to be fair, his backpack said Hollywood on it, so he blended right in.
Yeah.
Yeah, nobody well, noticed
that's
until
the security
he took
guard has a side job at a museum, and he just forgot which job he was at that moment. That's why he was so upset about the backpack.
Very fair, very fair. Speaking of jobs,
are you not allowed to bring a backpack into a museum because you might put like a dino skeleton in there?
Yeah, you might put one of the dino skeletons.
Some amber.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure that's exactly why you can't bring a backpack into museums, so you don't take things.
Okay. Like
not to rain on your parade, because
they were watching the Thomas Crown Affair, and there's that famous scene where Thomas Crown just puts a painting in his backpack and walks out. They're like, "How does he do it?"
He's sticking the last out. He can't
master thief.
Sir, did your JanSport have so many corners previously?
He can't zip it up all the way, so part of the frame is sticking right out of the backpack. Sir, you dropped this. And he hands him like a Giacometti sculpture. Oh, thanks. Just walk that out. So speaking of jobs, John Travolta, Moose, then goes on to do his job, which is he's one of those costumed weirdos that hangs around in Hollywood for tips to take pictures. But he's not like a famous character from the movies. He's an English bobby with a mustache and a really bad English accent.
Well, he got hired because his accent's so good, right?
Well, clearly this is happening because for the same reason that the only horror movie they ever show is Night of the Living Dead, public domain reasons. Like, you know, they can't have him be a Spider-Man because I don't think Sony would play ball with the Fanatic. But
at least have him dress up in, like, a fake superhero costume. I've never, ever seen English bobby walking around there.
Baffling.
I mean, and there's even a scene shortly after where we see another street busker performing for a crowd, and in that crowd is another costumed performer, Cereal Man.
Yes, I would die for Cereal Man. That's the Halloween costume of 2020. Holy shit.
He just has a cereal box on his head, right?
Yes. I mean, and like a superhero suit, but
and
like
an attitude.
Oh, yeah.
And the attitude is, I'm so good, I don't need to perform. I can watch other performers.
Yeah, he is our generation's Cheddar Goblin. Cereal Man.
People are just walking up to him and putting money in his hand. They're just like, "You just earned this just by being here. Thank you."
But I also like how Travolta is underlining the fact that he's British by who just yell things like, "The Beatles are coming."
Mm-hmm. Or he'll chase somebody down the street saying Jack the Ripper over and over.
Jack the Ripper.
At one point he said something like, "Here's the quine." And I was like, "Quine?" And it took me like 30 seconds to beautiful mind that he's saying queen.
But apparently he makes enough money at this job to have a fairly nice apartment and buy all this memorabilia. So I don't know what's going on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have to assume that he's living off of like a trust fund or something set up for him. Yeah, but so and he also meets Todd, a street magician, who is also basically a blockhead. He just puts a nail in his nose while his partner Slim picks the crowd's pockets. And Moose is like, "Oh, you're disrespecting the fans. You're disrespecting Hollywood." Because Moose has standards, you know?
Yeah.
When he falls into the realm of the Fanatic, it's going to be a big fall because he's a figure of dignity.
I do like these two street busker thieves, Slim and Todd, because they ham it up so much. Yeah. Like when Slim is lifting wallets, he's like licking his lips each time he picks one up, and which is crazy because if you're gonna expect people to tip you, don't take their wallet first.
It was right when he's asking for money the pickpocketing started. I'm like, that is the wrong time. They're going to realize their wallet is gone and start looking around.
So
for the
what they should do, he removes their wallet, then he has to put a new wallet back in there with fake money.
With just like
$1
in it. Yeah. Well, also, he only picks the pockets of people who have their arms crossed and are shaking their head, "No, no, no," while the tricks are going on. Because they know there's no tips from that guy, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and also, but he is very obvious about it. He might as well be going, "Yoink," as he takes the wallet.
His first lift is like $500 in singles, right?
The guy's on his way to the strip club.
Yeah.
After his shift at the strip club, you don't know.
It's true. Don't judge. Moose goes to the Hunter signing at the store, and Moose is like fantasizing that Hunter's like, "Hey, sit with me. You're my best friend now." But Hunter, right before Moose's turn, gets called away because his ex-wife has driven into the alleyway behind the store to complain to him that she had a date that night and he was supposed to watch their kid. Uh-huh. They need a shared calendar.
And his kid is allergic to comic book stores.
Well, but also, we were watching this and, like, Audrey pointed out, like, he's a fucking movie star. Like we're to believe that he watches his own child, like, when this sort of thing happens? Like, she would just get a babysitter, charge him money if she was like mad about it. Like, this is not, like, I mean, like, unless it's like one of these you know, "You're not spending enough time with your kid" things, I would understand that, but like, that does not seem to be the thing. It just seems to be like, "Oh, I had a date, like, you're supposed to cover for
me." Well, I think, I mean, it's almost like she's throwing it in his face that she has a date. Yeah. Maybe that's it.
Yeah, I think it's more that she's trying to get at him. Also, it can be very hard to find a babysitter, especially at the last minute. Mm-hmm. You're not a parent, so you wouldn't know these things. But anyway, because I'm doing my part to continue the human race on this earth,
overpopulating the earth, I often have trouble with brag.
So Moose interrupts Hunter's obviously stressful situation, and Hunter is incredibly overly rude to him in a way that leads me to believe that they realized that too late that they had to go somewhere from that, they couldn't start with Hunter being the biggest dick in the world. They had to build up to it, which means that by the time he is being stalked, Hunter is cartoonishly rough with Moose. But anyway, Moose is really hurt. Hunter, I guess, he's like, I'm done. I'm not signing anymore. Then walks back into the store, which leads me to believe that he just wanted Moose to go, and now he's going to stay all night signing people's memorabilia.
Yeah, that's what Adel usually does after his shows, right? You go out, and you're like, no more autographs, and then you sneak back in.
Well, I'll go to a bar next door, and I'm like, anybody recognize me? Please, I'm Chunt, please.
So they're like, say that again. Let me hear your voice again, and then you say it.
Bing bong, I'm Chunt. Hello, it's me.
And they're like, no, sorry, I thought you were somebody else. That's the worst. So Leah, she shows Moose an app that he can use to find Hunter Dunbar's house. That's a bad idea because of what's he going to do? Write a complaining letter to Hunter. And he goes to Dunbar's house to deliver it. This is when Hunter Dunbar threatens him to leave even more, and then writes his name really hard on Moose's shirt with a marker.
There's a moment where it looks like he stabs him with a Sharpie, and I'm like, just because it's called a Sharpie doesn't mean it can stab someone.
Well, also, he like just like yeah, he just it, stabs Dan? His like sternum, and he doesn't like even like move the marker around at all. But yeah. apparently he's written his name on the thing.
The motions of his hand are like he's inflicting harikiri on him. Like it's a total gutting of his
Yeah, and at this point...
This is after, of course, he had been jogging with his son, and when he sees the stalker outside his home, he goes, hey, son, go in and fire up the Xbox.
I think Hunter Dunbar, of all the characters in the movie, Hunter Dunbar seems to have more trouble interacting with other people than Moose does. Like, Moose seems pretty confident when he talks to people. Everybody likes him except Hunter Dunbar.
Well, I mean, Todd and Slim give him a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, they're cartoonishly evil toward him.
Uh-huh. That's true. They are cartoonishly evil. But you have to assume all those nails to the head have done some damage to Todd.
Yeah, and I mean, based on Todd's tan lines, it looks like he just recently picked up the trend of wearing only tank tops.
It is impressive to me that Todd takes a nail, checks to see that it's sharp, someone in the audience checks it, and then he covers his entire face with both hands, pulls them back, and the nail is through his nose. It's very impressive.
Uh-huh.
How does he do it?
Yeah. Dan, you're a big fan of close-up magic,
sleight
right?
of hand. He probably just shoves it through his nose.
Okay. let me Google that.
The movie would make more sense to me if Hunter Dunbar was like trying to be friendly with him and then got upset because he was getting too irritated with him and then Moose snapped. But instead, Hunter Dunbar is just a dick right from the beginning. Did this seem strange to you guys too?
Well, this goes to a sort of key question I have about the movie, which is who are we supposed to sympathize with? Because we have sympathy for Moose. Like he's obviously like doesn't necessarily understand fully like the interactions he has.
And he's played by John Travolta, so
right.
Of course.
But he does do do things that like overstep his bounds greatly, like later on in the movie, you know, invading his home, accidentally killing someone, spoiler alert. Like he's not entirely sympathetic. And Hunter Dunbar, the character that like maybe in one of these stalker fan movies would be the one we're supposed to sympathize with, is a dick all the way through the movie. So we are left without a particular rooting interest in any of the characters, I think.
Yeah, and like even the paparazzo friend, even she, I feel like, is pretty guilty of some of these things. Like she knows who she's dealing with, and she's encouraging him to do things. Or there's the security guard who's like, you shouldn't let those guys pick on you. You should You should beat him up.
When a security guard notices Todd and Slim teasing Moose in the bathroom where he changes into and out of his Bobby costume, and he's like, "You should stand up for yourself. Probably kill those guys. Maybe torture him first.
Yeah, don't forget the nose bones connected to the brain."
I feel like in the original script, he handed him a handgun, and then later on, when performing as a clown in a children's hospital, the handgun fell out, and then, oh man, he must like live in a society that's twisted. I don't know.
Oh man. And Moose, later when he lashes out at Todd, the security guard is like, "I'm proud of you. That was good." It's like, what kind of security guard are you? Like, why are you encouraging violence? Moose goes back to Hunter's house and leaves off a letter, but he runs away when Moose's maid sees him and says, hey, the maid then, whose name is Dora, tells Hunter about this, and then Hunter decides to take that opportunity to kiss her, and she's like, "No, we can't do that anymore." And you're like, "Ugh, Hunter, you're gross. Yeah. Don't do that. Stop." And then Hunter calls somebody, I'm not sure who, and is like, "Yeah, I kissed the maid again. Oh boy." And I was like, "Is that his therapist? Is he calling his ex-wife? Is that his son? Like, what? Who is he talking to?"
Is he talking to Harvey Levin over at TMZ?
It's the weather. He called the weather line.
And then shortly after this, doesn't he also go and yell at his gardener?
Yes.
Well, he tells the gardener, he's like, "Hey, if you see a weirdo around here, tell me.
And don't listen to your music while you're working."
I love the maid goes, "There's a strange man in the backyard. He was terrifying." And he goes, "You sure it wasn't the gardener?" And I was like, "Oh, buddy, no. Bad luck. Bad luck."
And then the gardener's like, "Hey, I'm done with my work. Can I go now?" And he's like, "Yeah, sure." And that gardener, I have to assume, was like, "I'm never coming back. This is not a job I want anymore."
He's like, "I'm only coming back with cuffs." A DVD of the movie Cuffs with Christian Slater.
Because he knows that's Hunter's favorite movie, and that's how to get back on his good side. Yeah. "Hey, I thought you and me could watch Cuffs."
He's like, young
movie?
Tony
how
Goldwyn.
You know?
Can I ask something? Do we ever see the gardener and Serial Man in the same place?
Oh.
Okay, just saying.
I mean, to be fair, we never see Hunter and the Serial Man in the same place. We never see Dora and the Serial Man in the same place.
To be fair, we only see Serial Man for 2 seconds.
We only see him for 2 seconds in the background of one shot.
Now, is Serial Man the sequel to Serial Mom?
Ooh.
I have to assume so.
And the prequel to Serial, the podcast.
Yeah. And the hit song Spoon Man was on the soundtrack because there was a bit of a miscommunication between the producers and Soundgarden.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Moose sneaks back into the house, into the yard, and Dora is like, "Hey, get out of here," and starts hitting him with like a magazine or something. He punches her, and she hits her head on a fountain or whatever, and she's dead.
Mm-hmm. You thought that was a magazine? What do you think magazines look like, Elliot?
I think
how
like
out of
a
touch
duster.
Are you in L.A.?
It was like a duster. Like, yeah. Do your magazines
like
come with
like
an
8-foot long red duster?
Guys, I'm going to pull back the curtain and reveal that, as usual, I was watching this movie on an iPad while I did the dishes. So I didn't pick up every single nuance of the film.
Right.
But she's dead now. He accidentally killed her. It's the classic of mice and men moment, or OMAMM, as it's known, OMOM.
Mm-hmm.
He wanders through the house. And this is the best sequence in the movie, where Moose wanders through the house. He's banging on the piano. He picks up some antlers that are just lying around and is like, "There's a moose on the loose."
Yeah.
And he's just running around. He brushes his teeth with either Hunter's toothbrush or Hunter's son's toothbrush. I'm not sure.
Uh-huh.
He's watching home movies on a DV cam of happier days for Hunter and his wife. It's like it's a real Lives of Others scenario. But the things you're doing, it's so clear that John Travolta, for at least part of it, was just kind of like, What else can I use? And they just followed him wandering around this house, improving with stuff.
Yeah, and
Kool-Aid Man through the wall.
And there's
he bursts through a wall. He throws a big party. Some apocalypse bikers show up because Lisa, the computer woman that he created, wanted to teach them a lesson.
He puts on a leather jacket that says Rico and goes Sandy, rockin' and rollin'.
A lot of he slides around in his underwear to old time rock and roll. He also, when he wears the Rico vest, he wears it backwards. So it says Rico on his chest. And someone's like, "You're wearing that backwards." And he's like, "I know." And it's just unnecessary. So,
I mean,
guess what?
That's the thing. Like, character touches sometimes feel unnecessary, Elliot, but that's kind of why they're so important. Now, the great thing about this is while he's watching the home videos on the little camcorder, of course, he falls asleep. And I feel like a lesser director would be like, "Well, the character's asleep. We can just cut the scene, right?" And they're like, no. "Hold it for another couple minutes." I feel like that's the description of much of this movie.
Hunter and his son come home, and they find, and Hunter puts his son to sleep, right? Mm-hmm. Not like you put a pet to sleep. He puts his son to bed, but not like he would take the maid to bed. Like anyway, okay, he's tucking him in.
You're making it worse.
But not the way you would not the way you would tuck into a big dinner.
Okay.
He's singing him a lullaby, but not the same way that you would like sing a lullaby to. Oh no, it is the exact same way.
Okay.
So, but we see that Moose is hiding under the son's bed.
Uh-huh.
Moose starts poking around. Hunter, of course, falls asleep in a chair, which is the sign of someone whose life is in trouble. And Moose walks over and starts smelling him,
mm-hmm.
and then sits down to watch the beginning of Night of the Living Dead, which triggers a memory of him watching Night of the Living Dead as a kid while his mom made out with some guy.
Uh-huh.
And I was not sure what that was implying. Was that implying that it was traumatic of him that his mom was dating again after what was probably a divorce, you know?
I think that's
or maybe,
it.
Maybe the death of his father that he couldn't
or maybe
hold up
that, or maybe that just he found refuge in movies.
Yeah,
like
I
that.
Think horror
it like
movies
he was
are
raised
a safe
by
space
movies.
For him. Yeah.
It's like a
but what
cable
is he finding
guy
refuge?
Move.
What is he finding refuge from?
Well, I mean, like human interaction that he has difficulty with.
Oh, okay, maybe. Because I wasn't sure if it was like in Watchmen, like Rorschach's backstory is that he's the son of a prostitute. And she and her Johns don't treat him well. And I was like, are they hinting at that? Because it's not doesn't seem like that at all. And to be honest, if that was my mom, I mean, I know I'm not Moose. If that was my mom and she was getting back into the game.
No offense, Elliot. Again, I feel like if your parents named you Moose, it would have been like this weird irony.
Yeah,
because I'm so tiny. I'd be like a little Moose. Well, they were going to name me Abs Jumbo, but at the last minute they decided not to.
Is that all one word, or is Jumbo a middle name? Is that a family middle name?
Well, it's two words, but it's one first name.
Okay.
So it's like a first name phrase. I was going to be Abs Jumbo. My middle name, of course, was going to be Pex McGee, and then my last name, Kalen. It's a family name.
Uh-huh.
Junior. It is a family name, Abs Jumbo Pex McGee Kalen.
Uh-huh.
That was my grandfather's name. So instead they named me after my other grandfather, Elliot Kalen, and they never looked back. So, but if I was him, I'd be like, hey, good on you, Mom. Good on you for going out there and remembering that you have a life outside of being a mom. But I guess for him, it's just horror movies. Now, at this point, there were
and
only
You're talking about the character Moose and not your grandfather, right?
Yeah.
There is a stellar moment where the boyfriend of the mom is like, ugh, what is that? Is that a kid in there?
Like, pretty obvious. Unless you're talking about the TV, which is a different thing entirely.
Yeah. No, he's like, is that a kid? It's got some kind of images on its screen. Kids don't have screens. What is this monstrosity? And they're like, no, it's a television. And he's like, explain. And they're like, well, we've harnessed the electron to transmit pictures and eventually sound over airwaves. He's like, air waves? Hold on a second. And the mom and it really ruins the moment of romance because they have to explain to him how science works. Sad, really. Now, at this point, there's only 35 minutes left in the movie. So you're like, okay, is someone going to take someone prisoner or kidnap them or threaten them or something like that, because there's not a lot of movie left. Moose is woken up by Hunter's cell phone alarm and runs away. So, nope, not yet. I guess not.
But I think this kind of establishes that Hunter is a deep sleeper, in part because he takes two kinds of pills.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
One for insomnia and one to sleep.
Two for sleep.
One to sleep. Yeah. And Moose is looking through Hunter's pills and he goes, oh, Hunter, don't do drugs. But Hunter is driving his son while listening to Limp Bizkit on the radio and talking about how great it is in the least realistic scene in the entire movie. And then they see Moose on the road, and Hunter stops his car and gets out and tells Moose if he ever shows up again, he's going to, put a gun up his butt and he'll be spitting bullets and blood for a week or something like that.
I think shitting bullets and blood.
Oh, okay. It's a convoluted threat. And he calls him a stalker, and Moose is like, I'm not a stalker. That's the word that really triggers
Yeah,
Moose.
It's a real, chicken in Back to the Future Part 2 situation.
Yeah, I think they were originally going to title this movie Stalker, but they were worried that it would have too many similarities with the Tarkovsky movie.
Yeah, they were worried too many people would go to it thinking they were seeing Tarkovsky's Stalker and be like, wait a minute. Why aren't guys walking through the forest for 3 hours doing nothing?
Yeah. I think there's a maybe the most genuine moment in the movie is where he confronts him and says, you're gonna be shitting blood and bullets. And then he yells, say it. And Travolta goes, I'm going to be shitting blood and bullets. And he goes, no, you'll never come back here. And it's like, you never said that. So it's like, a real human moment where for once the audience is like, we're with Travolta.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's so rare that I haven't been with Travolta. God, in years, but when we were together, we had such a good time. Just the laughs and like the affectionate moments, but I haven't been with him
famously under
years.
A dock, right?
What?
You made out under a dock?
Yeah, yeah, we made out under Doc Hollywood.
Yeah, that's right.
The Val movie Kilmer? Was screening at a drive-in,
okay.
and we were just under the screen.
Okay.
John Travolta has this weird thing where if he can't see either an image of Michael J. Fox or the actual Michael J. Fox, then he just can't get turned on. And so sometimes we just invite Michael J. Fox over and you have to sit there.
Okay.
This is a weird area.
Feels like libel.
Okay.
It feels like libel because it is. So anyway, it's not really. No one believes that, right? There's a little – now, every now and then there's been these little like animated illustrations of Moose.
Oh, right.
To really get across the whimsy,
I guess,
of the movie.
Like, are they like meant to be like – like street chalk drawings or something?
I don't know, but I liked them. They're cool looking, but the first one I feel like comes up halfway through the movie, and like this is too late to introduce a new element movie. Like you can't just...
No, I agree.
Yeah, there's only five elements. I think we've addressed that. The fifth one is love.
if this is going to be part of your style, you got to bring it in earlier than almost when the movie's over.
Yeah.
But it was the best thing about the movie was those illustrations.
It's like the little claymation bits in Life Less Ordinary, right?
Mm-hmm. Or like the anime in Kill Bill.
Uh-huh.
Or like that claymation hamburger in, what was that? Is it Better Off Dead?
Yeah.
Yeah, the best part of the movie.
Yeah. Or like in The Golden Child when that Pepsi can starts dancing.
Also the best part of the movie.
Yeah.
Besides I Want the Knife Wrapped.
Yeah. Or that part in Captain Phillips when the hot dog starts dancing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there was that part in Richard Jewell where there was like a dancing mouse, and he's like, "Cheer up, Richard, let me show you." And they like did a dance together.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Or in The Pianist where the can of peaches starts talking, right?
Yeah, that was hilarious.
It's like,
I can
suck my own dick.
yeah, that's...
That was in The Pianist, right?
That was in The Pianist, yeah. That's they wanted to do the play on words on the title.
Yes.
I haven't seen Queen and Slim yet, but I assume there's a part where clouds are just talking about them, and they're going like, yeah, go, Queen and Slim, you're doing great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is Stuart just agreeing with what you guys are saying.
There's that part in Little Women where, and this was not in the book, where that alien Gleepglorp comes down and is like, I've got an idea for a book for you, Little Alien Women.
Yep.
And Joe is like, yeah, that is a good idea, but what if they weren't aliens? And Gleepglorp is like, that's not my idea, and he flew away.
Because that's the thing, because Gleepglorp is very small, like that Hanna-Barbera alien that floats around and talks to Fred Flintstone.
Yeah.
And so when Joe suggested that it be called Little Non-Alien Women, he was like, that's insane because you are much larger than me.
Yeah.
Yeah, to me, you're the size of mountains and skyscrapers. And she's like, what's a skyscraper? And he's like, just wait a few decades. Wink! Because he can see the future.
Oh.
So anyway.
Okay.
And then the rest of the movie
is
him.
Just a few decades? Yeah. I think your timeline's off, but.
When the first skyscrapers, they weren't as tall as they are now, but the first, what they would call skyscrapers, were like the 1800s.
Yeah, like a three-story building would be a skyscraper.
I mean, she would also have to like travel to see this skyscraper, like, I don't know.
You're right, and that's impossible. People were glued to the ground back then.
Okay, well, let's move on with the movie.
That's your issue? It's literally about family where the dad is away from home.
There's not going to be skyscrapers out on, the prairie, wherever they are. Like, I don't...
You're right, Dan. You're right. And if someone said to me 3 years ago, or 5 years ago, Donald Trump's going to be president, I would have said, but not right here. He's going to be in another city. I don't have to worry about that.
All right.
We don't have presidents in California.
Let's move
along. Moose, as it to add insult to injury, or injury to insult, Moose's Vespa breaks and he takes a little bit of a tumble, goes home and cries, and he has a monologue. He burns all of his Hunter Dunbar memorabilia.
Uh-huh.
And we finally get to see a scene from Space Vampires, which is basically Dunbar and a woman standing in an alley, and she's like, they want revenge. And he goes, revenge is my middle name. And then they kiss, and I was like, oh, so he makes bad movies. I see.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I get it. Leah is like, hey, did you post a picture on social media of you smelling Hunter Dunbar in his sleep in his house? Don't do that. And he blocks her from his social media and throws her out of his house.
Yeah, she was worried because he's probably got a pretty big following, right?
Oh, also, let's address a little bit of a moment, which is I mentioned Back to the Future earlier. And not since, this high school kid is friends with a mad scientist, has a friendship been so unlikely and not explained as Leah and Moose? Because it's like she is a young paparazzi, and he is a middle-aged, proto stalker.
I guess he's middle aged.
Older than that, I guess.
I mean, he's in his 60s, yeah. I think, right?
Yeah.
I would say that probably.
I think the super hip haircut is throwing you off, Dan. Mm. His audition for D'Antfort haircut.
It's the exact haircut that Charlie Sheen has in Major League. Mm-hmm. The Wild Thing haircut.
LA doesn't like sports.
Oh, no.
No, I don't like sports, except for... Would you call dogfighting a sport?
Oh, God. Don't joke about that, Elliot.
I think probably them both being kind of night crawlers in their own way. They're part of... This is a real Day of the Locust, like, underbelly of Hollywood type of community. And so I think that's where it's supposed to be that, like, these are the weirdos and the eccentrics and the forgotten people of Hollywood. But they're not that weird. They're not that forgotten. They're not out at night very much.
I guess so, Elliot. But, like, I would have appreciated, like, maybe... Again, don't like a lot of backstory. Maybe a line or two.
I don't know. I mean,
saying,
I feel like
why the hell they're hanging out.
Not to provide backstory for the podcast, but this seems to be something you bring up kind of often, Dan.
I mean, I just Dan, we haven't released yet the Alita Battle Angel episode yet, right?
No, we haven't.
Because there, I remember your cry was, more backstory, explain the world more,
again,
please.
Then I said one or two lines. Don't like a lot of backstory, but if something is weird in the movie, I appreciate some sort of explanation.
It would be great if at some point Moose just turned to her and he goes, hey, don't forget, you owe me like 50 grand, right? Anyway, what were we talking about? Just a quick table setting just for us to be like, yes.
When Moose is like, when I found you in a basket on my doorstep as a baby and raised you to be a fan, we formed a sort of father-daughter relationship. Yeah, of course, Moose.
Isn't that right,
I'm
Leah
just
Moses?
Saying I don't buy this friendship. That's all.
Mm-hmm. When she's like... You're my roller derby coach. I need to make sure that you stay out of trouble.
Dan, I've got a lot of videos to show you then of some unlikely friendships. A pig and a duck.
I mean, I would love to see those. I would love to see those. You know that there's something I would love more.
Yeah. A Turner and a Hooch.
Charles Manson and Fred Rogers. It happened, Dan. Unlikely friendships. That's Elliot Kalin's continuing slander corner. Anyway. So they get into a big fight. This is finally, I think there's like 15 minutes left in the movie when the fan becomes the fanatic because Hunter wakes up tied to his bed. Mm-hmm. Moose is lying on the floor in a pool of blood. Oh no, kidding. It's just a joke. He's just fooling. Mm-hmm. So he stabs Hunter. Kidding. It was a fake knife. Then he leaves the room and then he comes back in a Jason mask with another knife. Kidding. And I was like, Moose, can you cut it with the pranks? Mm-hmm. Come on.
And
it's
just
like this,
Moose suddenly,
this nonstop, it's like this nonstop parade of pranks.
Yeah, and it's a cavalcade of like actual movie references. Like the first half of the movie is all, it's like moon vampires and ghost ship. And all of a sudden he does like an Aliens reference, Friday the 13th reference, Halloween reference.
He pours gasoline on him while singing Stuck in the Middle of You with You. Yeah, and it's like... make up your mind. Does this take place in our world or in a crazy fake movie world?
Well,
come on.
And it's too bad that this guy who claims to be raised by horror movies, but he makes a clear Friday the 13th reference, but then conflates Devin Sawa's character's performance with Jamie Lee Curtis. Come on.
I love when he makes him repeat the...
That was a big gaffe.
That line that we see at the top of the movie, the you're a fan, without you this isn't possible, whatever that is. What was the line?
Without you, I'm nothing.
Sawa finally says it, and Travolta goes, say it again.
Mm-hmm.
Which to me is like, if somebody said like, forget about it, Jake, it's Chinatown. He goes, one more time.
And then
I said, forget about it, Jake, it's Chinatown.
He turns to the camera and winks.
I want to say, I don't get what we're supposed to think of what's going on here or what Travolta's, like Moose is thinking. Cause like,
we're supposed to think, boy, Fred Durst, you're a double threat, filmmaker and amazing musician.
Well, but we're like supposed to think that like Moose is finally taking his revenge, I guess. Like he's tied Devin Sawa up and like doing all these things but like Moose is also treating it like, oh, we're just having fun reenacting like movie shit together. Like this is fun.
Well,
it's a prank.
It's kind of a horror movie too. Like there is an idea of society has clearly failed this guy, and his friends have failed him, and he's just trying to find some moment of human connection, Dan.
I don't know what you're doing here.
I'm not doing a bit. I'm just saying that, like, I don't know if necessarily you are supposed to sympathize with him at this point because he's, I mean, you sympathize with him because he's a human, but I feel like there's also an element where he's like, he is, like, he's clearly doing villainous stuff.
No,
like,
but I'm just saying, I don't know what, not even, like, how we're supposed to, like, take, like, whether we're supposed to sympathize with him, but, like, what he's doing. Like, what
well,
is
I think,
he
Dan,
doing?
Well, I think, Dan, there's, I think the confusion here is that Moose is a character who will not have a clearly thought out, brilliant plan.
Yeah.
But the movie should have a plan for what's going to happen. And it feels like the movie doesn't know what's. It's okay if Moose is like. Like, I could see this scene done well where someone is being threatening, they think, in a playful way.
Right.
But because the other person does not know how far this character will go, they're scared the whole time. Like, they don't know what's a joke and what's not a joke. And that could be, like, really scary. But because the movie is not clear, it's like. Wait, what?
I think,
like,
that's
come
the
on.
Confusion
Where are we
I'm
going
having.
With this?
Yes.
Yeah. Like, you're blaming the movie, not Moose.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because how could you blame a moose?
You can't blame a moose.
Mm-mm.
Majestic.
No.
Yep.
Incredibly majestic, yeah. Yeah. And if you give a moose a muffin, is that what the book
I
is?
I don't know.
Give a moose a muffin, he'll walk 1,000 miles.
Who moved my cheese?
If you give a moose a muffin, he'll ask for a milkshake. Strawberry. Real ice cream, please. Real ice cream.
Real ice cream, please. Important. And then when you give him the milkshake, he'll take your favorite actor hostage.
Yeah.
So, and then he'll be so hungry from taking him hostage, he's going to want a muffin.
So now we finally get a taste of why Hunter is Moose's favorite actor. Because he turns on that Hunter Dunbar charm and starts giving Moose a little bit of an acting lesson.
Oh, yeah. He starts sweet-talking him. He starts telling him how, they're going to have so much fun and how they're going to visualize it. You know, actors, they need to visualize things sometimes. Let's visualize all the fun we're going to have. And he leads him through a fantasy of, like, getting ice cream together and, what, going to a movie set together or something?
Yeah.
And then I think getting married and, like, raising children together.
Yep.
And
yep, with plastic on the furniture.
Yeah, of course, yeah. And one of them, of course, dying before the other, and the other one being like, oh, he was my one true love, and just living in his memories. And you know what? At least he has his memories, as I assume Moose is going to outlive Hunter. And Moose is just kind of, like, put into a home by Hunter's son, who has really come to see Moose as, like, a surrogate father in the end. And the son marries Leah, even though there's an age difference between the two of them, because he's just a teen and she's kind of like a young woman. But it's a real Jake Lloyd, Natalie Portman type attraction, where he's going to grow up and they're going to get married secretly on another planet. But mm-hmm. Hunter Dunbar's son, the thing is, he doesn't like sand because it gets everywhere.
Yep.
It's itchy and scratchy. Mm-hmm. But he eventually, itchy and scratchy go on to be Bart Simpson's favorite cartoon characters. So Hunter convinces Moose to untie him, and then he's like, hey, tricked ya. And he shoots Moose and then stabs him in the eye, and he's like, and he shoots his hand off.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy.
He shoots off his smell sticks. Is what I assume Moose calls his fingers, because he keeps doing that. He keeps doing that little ear rub and then sniffing his fingers. You know how people do. So you know he calls his fingers his smell sticks.
You just know
he just
it.
Just got a little peek into Adel's mind.
Cinema boy, back at it again with the smell sticks.
That's not canon, but in the Tales from the Phonetic book that you write, he's going to refer to them as smell sticks. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, and Hunter goes way overboard in destroying Moose, and that, but then he kind of feels bad about it, and so he just lets Moose go.
Well, he has a moment of like, what am I doing? Hold on, I shouldn't kill this guy.
At the point where he
I've become the space vampire.
Yeah.
At the point where he takes out the knife and starts to cut Moose, I did burst into song singing, everybody cut Moose, cut Moose.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
Had to.
Very nice. There's a movie about a town where stabbing is illegal, and Kevin Bacon's got to change that. And everyone in town is like, wait, this is a good law. Why are you trying to change this?
Yeah, I mean, that's most towns, Elliot.
I would go as far as to say every town.
It's not unusual for someone to move to a town where stabbing is illegal.
And it's not unusual to fall in love with anyone.
No. So, you know? Once again, I do like any time a character sleeps in a bed with a lever-action rifle above it and, like, a giant Bowie knife in his, like, in the little drawer next to his bed.
Well,
was the knife loose, or did it have a sheath? I think
it
was loose.
He took it out of a sheath?
Okay,
He took it out of a sheath, yeah, because he was...
He's not a maniac.
He was in the direct-to-video sequel to Crocodile Dundee, Crocodile Dundee: The Next Generation, and that's where he got that knife from.
That's not a knife. This is a Sharpie.
Well, earlier he says to Interval, he's like, I've got the real knife from Blood Sacrifice or something. I could go get it, sign it for you. And I wondered if they were like, good, now we can have him stab him because we had a line of dialogue saying he has a knife in the house.
Chekhov's knife.
Good filmmaking. Moose somehow wanders back to Hollywood Boulevard, and the tourists there think that his horrific wounds are a costume, and these two kind of Euro-trash tourists want to take a picture with him. And he's just like, boo, 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 boo. But in a way, he's achieved his dream. He's finally a character people want to be around. Not an English Bobby that no one wants to be near, but a horrifically wounded man crying while wandering down the street. And Leah finds him, double parks her car to go get him, and then just wanders off with him. And he sees the star for I forget which actor or actress which actor on the ground and starts talking about how great they are. And then, movie's not over. At Hunter Dunbar's house, the police arrest him because Dora's body has still been lying there
for like days,
and that Hunter or his son or anybody never went out and noticed that never noticed that Dora was missing, but also never noticed that Dora's body was just lying on the ground outside his house.
Well, the gardener is the one who brings the police, Elliot. So maybe the gardener finds the body.
Well,
the
gardener has been working undercover, right? I thought that was pretty clear.
The gardener is a serial man who works with the cops, not against them. He's not a vigilante.
When they need help, they put the cereal signal up in the sky, which is it's of course a light that's just shaped like a bowl of cereal with a spoon sticking out of it.
But yeah, like Hunter Dunbar gets taken away in handcuffs for the murder of this woman, and we're supposed to think like, oh, how dark and like twisted I guess this is. But I was sitting there being like, this case is gonna fall apart immediately. Like John Travolta's blood is all over the place.
On social media, he posted a video of him kissing his head in his house.
And his 40,000 followers saw it.
And if he murdered this woman, like, he would not just let her, like, stay in his backyard. He would do something about, like this is all, none of it hangs together to frame this guy.
Hunter Dunbar, he's a star. He thinks he can get away with anything, man. Yeah. So it's time for him to be... I think the audience is supposed to be like, good, Hunter's going to get taken down a peg. But you're right. Almost instantly they're going to be like, oh, you have an alibi for when this happened?
Imagining his lawyer being like, people of the jury, why would Hunter Dunbar murder his housekeeper and then just leave the body in the backyard? He would clearly chop it up and eat it.
Yeah, exactly.
Can we just...
Not just to get rid of the evidence, but because my client is a cannibal.
Objection, Your Honor. The liquefied eye does not indicate anything. And I think the maid was still holding the letter he wrote, right?
Yeah, clearly the maid was holding evidence. That's why I had to eat the body to gain her memories.
I point you to the Nest cameras that clearly recorded a maniac coming in and killing the maid and then attacking my client. And they're like, the prosecutors are like, we want to issue a writ of Hunter Dunbar is a jerk. And the judge is like, I'll allow it. And that's why he goes to jail.
Your Honor,
to the worst jail.
There are
jail.
Moose tracks all over the place.
There was a moose on the loose, ladies and gentlemen of the jury. This unidentified, and my client Hunter has dedicated himself to finding the real moose who committed these ghastly crimes. Meanwhile, his son is still sleeping.
So, are you saying you'd like at the very end for there to be some kind of an update as to how the criminal proceedings went, or the
no? I'm not saying that at all.
Yeah, Dan, I kind of feel that way about most like detective shows. Like, I would like every episode of Elementary. I'm like, I want to know if Sherlock actually caught this guy.
No, yeah, you're right, sir. I want an Unbreakable style like paragraph that come up on the screen.
Paragraph of text
to explain what happened to everyone. I mean,
they do call him Unbreakable at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. There's a little voiceover from Leah where she says that Moose lost his hand and his eye, but he never lost his love of Hollywood or something like that.
And we do get a little drawing, one of those famous drawings, with him with a pirate eye patch, a hook, and then he sprouts angel wings, and then Leah jumps on his back, and they probably fly into eternity.
Guess he's dead.
Yeah, I don't know what that's supposed to signify.
That's all that's about. I mean, they should have shown him in costume as a pirate, talking to tourists, because now you can really do that, and that's a real thing that people might want to take a picture. Like, now he's Jack Sparrow, and just show him being like, hello, it's me, Jack Sparrow.
Here come the Beatles.
Jack Sparrow didn't have, like, a hook for a hand or an eye patch, and he's like, I'm Jack Sparrow, having seen hard times.
To be fair, he wouldn't have a hook for a hand. He would have five little hooks as fingers.
That's true. Why don't people ever do that? Anyway, moving on to final judgments. Is this a good bad movie, a bad bad movie, or a movie you kind of like? I'm going to say, look, this movie is hateful. This is a hateful movie.
Yeah.
Like, Fred Durst clearly, like, hates his fans, hates the people that made him famous. This is his idea of what fans are like. And but oddly enough, he like makes the star also hateful. And I think it might be just because he doesn't want to be accused of hating his fans. He's like, well, if everyone's horrible, then no one's horrible.
No, and there's probably a certain amount of like, I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's when you work in that field, there's a chance that you could see like other people as being worse.
Yeah, no, I know. Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to take issue, Dan. I think that, and I can't get inside the mind of Fred Durst. I can't get through that red Yankees cap he's wearing backwards. But I would say that I think you're misreading it, and that Moose is supposed to be a figure of sympathy, that this is like Joker. He's a figure of sympathy who's pushed too far by this terrible system that destroys people, a system known as Hollywood. Mm. Dream Factory? More like Nightmare Factory.
I mean, Scream Factory's right there on the table, Elliot.
Oh, you're right. But they did make Scream, both the movies and the TV show, so people might be like, yeah, it's a factory that makes Scream.
And I mean, it's an actual company that really distributes horror movies, but...
Yeah, that's true. Okay, Dream Factory? More like Ice Cream Factory.
There we go.
Okay, Dan, that fits the character of the movie. Did Elliot answer your question, Dan?
No, I don't. I've lost the thread of what's going on.
No, I think Dan sees this as an attack on Moose, and I see it as Moose being the misguided hero, and the star is the bad guy. But they're both treated terribly by the movie, both unlikable.
I don't understand where my sympathy is supposed to lie, and I'm not one of the people who like thinks that there has to necessarily be a sympathetic character in a story. But at the same time, I think the movie thinks there is one, and I disagree with the movie on that point.
Okay, that's fair. So you would call it a good movie?
I'm going to go bad, bad. It's really hard to get past the performance John Travolta is giving and the performance the movie has given John Travolta. Like, I think he's doing it as best he can with like a completely misguided thing. Like, I don't know. It's upsetting to have this person, who obviously is supposed to have developmental problems, like go through all of these things, and like this is the story that Fred Durst wanted to tell. If you can turn off the caring part of your brain, it's kind of interesting to watch the movie just to see how misguided everything in it is.
Uh-huh.
But I wouldn't necessarily recommend that to anyone. So I guess I'll go bad, bad.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say it's a bad, bad movie. I don't think there's much redeeming about it. I mean, like, Travolta throws himself into this role like he's thrown himself into a couple other bad movie roles, which I guess I appreciate that. Like he's not phoning it in, although maybe there's times when you kind of wish he was. So bad, bad.
I would say if the roles were reversed, if John Travolta played himself and Devon Sawa just played a stalker, this movie would be amazing.
Yeah.
So I think they
that's actually
miscast,
pretty good insight.
Yeah. Miscast. I think they tried to have Travolta play himself. He wanted to go for the Oscar. Took a huge swing. Swung for the fences. Threw his back out. Bad movie. But I do think it is Durst's fault. It felt like every scene they had one take.
Yeah.
And
do you think they didn't cast it the other way around because they were worried that Devon Sawa would be too typecast having played
Stan?
Yeah,
he's like, I don't want to play the Stan again, and Travolta's like, I don't want to play me again. if there's a Serial Man spinoff, I will anything that's needed, I will fund that. I will watch that, whatever's possible.
Guys, I understand all your objections to the movie, it being a bad, bad movie, and it is a not pleasant movie, but to see John Travolta dressed as an English Bobby doing a terrible English accent for no reason, and to have the characters in the movie talking about how great the band of the director is, I'm going to have to call this a problematic good-bad movie, I think.
Okay.
There's also a point where John Travolta literally says into the mirror, this is a bad script.
yeah, that's true.
If you're looking for a new comedy podcast, why not try the Beef and Dairy Network? It won Best Comedy at the British Podcast Awards in 2017 and 2018. Also, ILO.
There were no horses in this country until the mid to late 60s.
Specialist bovine arse vet.
Both of his eyes are squid's eyes.
Yogurt buffet.
She was married to a bacon farmer who saved her life.
Farm-raised snow leopard.
True.
Download it today. That's the Beef and Dairy Network podcast from MaximumFun.org. Also, maybe start at episode 1, or weirdly, episode 36, which for some reason requires no knowledge of the rest of the show.
Hello there, ghouls and gals. It is I, April Wolf. I'm here to take you through the twisty, scary, heart-pounding world of genre cinema on the exhilarating program known as Switchblade Sisters. The concept is simple. I invite a female filmmaker on each week, and we discuss their favorite genre film. Listen in closely to hear past guests like the Babadook director, Jennifer Kent, Winter's Bone director, Deborah Granick, and so many others every Thursday on MaximumFun.org. Tune in if you dare.
It's actually a very thought-provoking show that deeply explores the craft and philosophy behind the filmmaking process while also examining film through the lens of the female gaze. So, like, you should listen.
Switchblade Sisters.
Let's do our sponsors.
Oh.
Hey.
Let's do them. Yeah, let's just do them.
The Flophouse is in large part funded by listeners like you, and the Max Fund Drive is just around the corner. But also, our show is sponsored in part by Raycon. Our wireless world calls for wireless earbuds. Check out the wireless earbuds from Raycon. Raycon stylish and discreet earbuds start at about half the price of other premium wireless earbuds on the market, and they sound just as amazing as other top audio brands. And their latest model, E25, is their best one yet, with 6 hours of playtime, seamless Bluetooth pairing, more bass, and a more compact design that gives you a nice noise-isolating fit. The company was co-founded by Ray J, and celebrities like Cardi B are obsessed with Raycons. Pick up a pair and see what all the hype is about. Guys...
Yep.
I was dubious about wireless headphones for reasons I probably shouldn't get into because they wouldn't want me to provide possible negatives.
Uh-huh.
But I'm saying that the possible negatives, haven't had any of them with these earbuds. I've had a great time with them. They come with a little charging case you can carry around.
Okay, yeah.
With
yep.
You tap on your old ear and it stops the podcast you're listening to without you having to get your phone out.
What can, if you rub on your ear and then smell it?
You can do that if you like. It's I mean, you can do that without Raycons. You can do it with Raycons.
But the Raycons don't negatively affect your use of smelling sticks.
The ear smelling is still
thank you
a thing you can do. I don't know. I just I've appreciated being able to walk around and not get my wire caught on, say, a cabinet drawer. As has happened several times.
Considering wires in my life, my headphone wires are constantly getting caught on everything.
Uh-huh.
On the dishwasher, cabinets, doors, children, small animals, car doors, all sorts of things. To live
spikes.
In a wireless world, it's... What?
You get it caught on spikes, hooks.
Angels, Buffies.
Hellraiser heads. Sanders.
Willows.
Yeah.
It's, Giles's.
Anya's.
I think it's easy Drusilla's. To underestimate. It's easy to underestimate how much nicer things are when you don't have to worry about wires until you get to that point. It's like, this wire is fine. And then you live without a wire and you're like, oh, this is much better.
So now's the time to get the latest and greatest from Raycon. Get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/flop. That's buyraycon.com/flop for 15% off Raycon wireless earbuds. I'm going to say
earbuds. The whole body is an ear. Yeah.
I'm going to say Raycon for the easiest.
Best John Mayer song.
The Raycon for the ease of getting to buyraycon.com is spelled RAYCON. That's Ray like the rays of the sun and con as in con artist.
When we were just.
All right. Okay. Again, Dan, maybe you want to pick a different.
Okay. Con as in against.
Wait, no.
Okay.
I mean, con is a negative prefix. There's no good way of saying
con
that.
Air is a good movie.
Con Air is a good movie. Yeah.
Contract.
Confidant.
Contract.
Contact with Jodie Foster. Yeah.
Confidential.
Yeah, it's great.
LA Confidential.
Yeah.
We have a Jumbotron. I believe I gave that to Elliot. So, Elliot, take
you
it away.
Did,
sorry, you gave that to Abs Jumbo?
Gave it to Abs Jumbo.
Jumbotron?
Abs Jumbo. Pex McGillicuddy.
Jumbotron.
Thank you. As if the only thing more jumbo than this is me. So, who is this message for? It's for Tam Tran, and the message is from Chris Morgan. And it says, to my friend Tam Tran, may you find mortgage payments just as enriching as the freedom to travel and eat out under rent control. Don't forget to register to vote at the new address and let me know if you ever need to borrow my ladder. Chris Morgan, Oakland, California.
Well, that's a nice message. And there's a couple of things to remember in there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like an offer for a ladder.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of reminders about things. Hey, Dan, you know what else we got coming up?
What?
A live show. Oh! Okay.
See, Adel, sometimes we don't just record a podcast in Dan's living room and in Elliot's closet. We sometimes record them in front of a live audience.
How does that go?
So, not well, but...
And can people scream at you, or...
Oh, almost exclusively.
I mean, they can, and they do. So on Saturday, April 18th, 2020, only 3 days after tax day in America. But hey, that doesn't matter, because we're not going to be in the United States. We're going to be in Toronto, Canada. That's right, we're returning to Toronto in the Royal Cinema as part of the What the Film Festival. As has been told to me recently, we will be steps away from the setting of Little Italy, the movie we watched and did a podcast of recently. So see if the Flophouse Boys are going to get the shit kicked out of them. Saturday, April 18th, 2020, in Toronto, as part of the What the Film Festival. Now, we're not fully sure what movie we're going to watch, but it's going to be a smaller, weirder movie because it's part of the What the Film Festival.
And Dan, you were saying you have been practicing some kind of special dance for the thing that people can only see to believe.
It's sort of like if you combine sort of a floss and a Charleston at the same time.
I'm picturing it, and nope, I'm dead.
See?
So some sort of Floralston. Okay, interesting. Well, you'll see that Saturday, April 18th. We will be doing more live shows in the year, but we don't have any scheduled yet. So if you're in the Toronto general area or even, you know, in upstate New York, come on and see this show because I don't know for sure when we're going to be back around there.
Yeah, if your family is maybe visiting Niagara Falls, why don't you extend that little vacay and come see us?
Yeah, slowly turn, step by step, and come see us at the Royal Cinema in Toronto. Now, another thing I'd like to promote is a exciting Max Fun product, or should I say Maximus Fun product, because iPodius is finally here. That's right, iPodius, my podcast with John Hodgman, where we are recapping and discussing the British miniseries I, Claudius, from 1976, I think it was. 1970, it was in the 70s. Anyway, I, Claudius, we are talking about it, recapping it. By the end of the series, I found myself really moved by the conversations I was having with Hodgman about it, but we're also funny. You'll hear from our producer, Jordan Cowling, also who works with us on the Flophouse, and a number of guest stars. John Hodgman talked to Sir Patrick Stewart during it. I talked to Patricia Quinn, who's one of the stars of the series, and we got a lot of other celebrity cameos. And so, iPodius, it's on all your podcast places right now. The first episode's out. By the time this episode is released, the second episode will be out. And who knows how many more. So iPodius from Maximus Fun.
I want to tell everyone, you know, Audrey and I watched the first two episodes of iClaudius, which were released as one episode in the U.S. Watch those. And then we put the iPodius on the big speaker. We Bluetoothed it over to the speaker. Listened while we were doing chores around the house. A delightful Saturday. So much fun.
Thank you very much.
So are you recommending his podcast or Saturdays?
Or Bluetooth?
I'm all of it. All of it's great. So we should move on, though, to letters from listeners.
Uh-huh.
Listeners
now, guys,
like
before
you. Sorry?
Before we start the letters, normally I have a song during this section where I sing about letters. Of course, as I mentioned at the top, I have a cough. My throat is not feeling so great, so I feel like I shouldn't do a song for the letters section today.
Can you do a limerick or something?
Luckily, my old friend Randy Newman happens to be here, and he said he'd sing one, so take it away, Randy. You know, sometimes letters, they got something to say. So they send the letters to you at the Flophouse, and you got a friend in me. Oh, yeah.
Sorry, Randy, while we have you here, how much of Three Amigos did you write?
Well, I'll tell you, a fair amount. Three Amigos worked on it hard because you got a friend in Randy Newman.
Okay, well.
And Randy, what about that collaboration you're doing with Gary Newman?
He's going to sing about cars. I'll sing about L.A. We're guys whose names are Newman in a major way, because you got a friend in me.
And I'm so sorry. You're holding up a sign that said you wanted to say a brief something about Paul Newman passing.
I'm sad every day that we lost that great actor.
Glad we still have his salad dressing to remember him by, because he had a friend in me.
And you wanted to audition for Wayne Knight's role of Newman?
Jerry!
Why is...
Sorry, Randy, real quick. Are you jealous? Yeah. Are you jealous that John Goodman's named John Goodman and you're only new man?
Being good's good, but I like being new. And I'm gonna tell this to you, that you got a friend in me.
And Randy, what words do you want to hear from God when you enter heaven?
That he forgives me for that stuff that I did. And also, he's got a friend in me.
This is Inside the Newman Studio. We want to thank our guest, Randy Newman.
Okay, so...
You know, that was real fun, being on the podcast. But every time, feels like the last. But then you got a friend in me.
Okay, well, this first letter... Thank you, Randy. This first letter...
You're welcome, Dan.
Wow, I kind of feel insulted that I'm not Randy Newman's friend. Like, it seemed like every other person
has got a friend in him.
But
I'm sorry, Dan. I thought that went without saying, but I guess our friendship needs to be reinforced by words. Because you got a friend in me.
Thank you, Randy. That's all I needed.
In a way, it cheapens our friendship that I got to keep telling you that we're friends and you don't just feel it inside because you got a friend in me.
And how do you feel about L.A.? You hate it or you...
I'm ambivalent about L.A.
Oh, wow.
Bump, set, things pop the changed. Ball.
I mean, you know, people's opinions change over the years. Okay, so this first letter is...
I mean, Randy Newman, no offense, Randy, he is an old man by this point. He is no longer a new man, so he changes, you know.
Yeah, this first letter is from Bren, last name withheld. I was recently listening to an episode where you're talking about movie universes you'd like to live in. Uh-huh. I believe Dan's was The Shire, pre-Lord of the Rings drama. So my question is, if you had to pick a movie universe that would be your personal nightmare to live in, what would it be and why? Stay floppy, Bren, last name withheld.
Hmm.
I want to say this is kind of general. This is not a specific movie universe, but any of those futuristic movie universes where you eat your meals in pill form, I would not like to be in. Because I'm always watching that like, yeah, okay, science has decided to take one of the great pleasures of life, which is eating, and eliminate it.
Yeah.
Does not make sense to me. Like, science, work on something
better. And you're also
better.
Like... You're also like, think about all the people who work in the cutlery industry that are now out of work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good point. Very good point. A foundation of the economy. So that be your nightmare, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, as a person who enjoys to cook and enjoys to eat very much, yeah, like, I would not want to live in that universe.
Yeah, I can understand that. I think probably for me, obviously it goes without saying, any universe where the Earth has been overrun by monsters... Or serial killers.
Mm.
That would be a real nightmare.
Yeah, like a purge, like getting caught in a purge.
I do not want to be in a purge, and I don't want a purge. But I'll probably also like the Judd Apatow universe, sure.
Okay, yeah.
And interesting fun fact, in researching movie universes for this question, I found out that on Wikipedia, Reboot is considered to be in the same universe as the Money for Nothing video, which I had never thought about, and I'm wondering, where's that crossover, huh?
Yeah, you want to amend your answer for what universe you want to live in, right?
Yeah, because I want to live in that blocky, computer-animated Money for Nothing video where you get two great choices. You can either play the guitar and get chicks for free, or you can install microwave ovens.
Yeah,
cool jobs.
I feel like the exact lyrics of that song might be best not, you know, carefully examined. But
No, there's certainly one line in that song that, even though it's in the voice of a character, is still something I would not say.
It's more harsh than you would like.
Yes, exactly. But... That's just a blue-collar working man watching MTV, you know? Even though, as said in the beginning, he wants his MTV. But is that a different character? In the video, it's one of those guys, but in the song, maybe it's a different character? I don't know. Dan, what do you think?
I don't know.
I think Dan was checking his phone. Adel, is there a movie universe?
Why do you feel the need to... Like, you, who are so interested in maintaining the professionalism of the podcast, did not need to call me out at the one time I was...
Dan, has it ever occurred to you that I am more likely to call you out when I see you going to your phone? But Adel, yeah, do you have a movie universe you would not want
to
live in?
I gotta say, based on my personal preferences, the Back to the Future 2 universe.
They should have called it Back to the Tuture.
Back to the
Tuture.
Tuniverse. Mamma Thria is what they should call the third Mamma Mia. Mamma Thria. They should make it just for that. Specifically, just because in Back to the Future 2, they wear two ties instead of one tie. Everyone wears two ties. I hate wearing ties, so I feel like just based on that alone, if I get to a funeral or a wedding, I would not want to wear two ties. I feel like that would be highly uncomfortable.
So not the fact that they're living in the Biff-verse where, where a kind of asshole millionaire has taken over America, since we do live in that universe now. It's just the two ties thing that bothers me.
Just the two tie things. And being fired over fax is pretty brutal.
That's pretty brutal. And also that dehydrated pizza probably can't be very good, right?
No, not at all.
I don't know. Isn't it like Pizza Hut brand? Right?
You're right. So it's great. So it's amazing. Pizza's so good, you can only serve it out of a hut. Hey, they're like, should we call our new restaurant Pizza Palace? Let's not promise too much.
Pizza Shack?
It's a hut. Pizza Shack? People are going to think they're going to buy radios
there.
That's
fair. That's
right. Yeah, yeah. Okay, great.
I would probably say... I'd probably say some kind of like dystopia, right? Like the Alexander Payne movie universe.
Sideways?
Like Sideways or About Schmidt. Although, I mean, I guess I'd like to spend the rest of my years with June Squibb. She's really great. I guess, I don't know. I mean, I guess sometimes, you know, the perfect kind of hell is one that has, you know, like Perfect Cage has beautiful bars. You know what I mean?
So this second and final letter is from Zach, last name withheld.
Mm-hmm. Zach Braff, sure. Star of Alex.
Who says,
MD? What was the name of that
Alex
show?
Alex Incorporated. Alex MD would be a doctor, not a podcaster. Although theoretically, it could be a health podcast.
Hey, floppers. I've been jumping around to random episodes in your back catalog. I gave episode 270, Interview with a Vampire, a listen yesterday. In that one, Elliot asks for advice about what to tell his kids about Santa. Elliot, you should definitely do what my mom did for me. The last winter before I started elementary school and was therefore about to be around kids who believed in Santa, my mom wanted me to be prepared, but to not ruin it for others. First, she explained what other kids believed about Santa. Coming to almost every house, going down chimneys with gifts, etc. She then explained the origins of Santa Claus, how he was based on a real person, St. Nicholas, but that he lived and died a long time ago, and so was not coming down people's chimneys, bringing them gifts.
And you're saying gifts, not gifts, the animated...
gifts.
Okay, animated image, okay.
It was instead parents who got all the gifts for their children. It was a very sensitive, well-thought-out explanation that answered all of my questions and set me up to be a well-functioning member of a society that likes lying to other kids. Mm-hmm. The next time we went to a grocery store, the clerk, checking us out, asked us, "So what is Santa getting you for Christmas?" Without missing a beat and remembering my training, I answered, "Oh, nothing. My mom told me Santa was dead." So, okay. Now that I've given you some invaluable advice, I was hoping you could return the favor. I'm scheduled to be getting a vasectomy soon. Mm-hmm. After the surgery, I'll be sitting on the couch for a couple of days watching movies. I want some titles that fit the theme, so I've got Castle Freak and Antichrist queued up. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's also a Lorena Bobbitt miniseries. Mm-hmm. I've got a couple of days to fill up, though. Help me, floppers. You're my only hope. Yours in floppitude, Zach, last name withheld. Now I think...
Right off the top of my dome, I'm going to say there's that great scene in RoboCop where he shoots the bad guy in the dick. There's also Hot Dog.
Perfect.
There's Hot Dog the movie.
Ooh, yeah. Can Cinema Boy get in here?
Cinema Boy, yeah,
I gotta
please.
I got to say, if you're getting a vasectomy, first movie you should watch, Damon Wayans, Blank Man.
Okay, I was going to say Street Trash. There's a scene in Street Trash where they play Keep Away with a severed penis.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not forget that both in Piranha 3D, there is a close-up of a severed penis that has just been bitten off of Jeremy O'Connell. And that in
Jeremy O'Connell's
Sorry, Jerry O'Connell. Jerry O'Connell. Jeremy O'Connell is dead, maybe? I don't know. And that in Snakes on a Plane, a snake does bite a man's dick, and it leads to the immortal line, "Ah, get off my dick."
Mm-hmm. Doesn't the Piranha... like, also kind of, like, barf up the penis?
Oh, no.
Yeah, he bites it off, and then he spits it. He, like, throws it up in front of the camera.
Yeah.
Because that's... And why that movie was nominated for Best Picture, I don't know.
Yeah. The movie that famously we went to see on the day of your wedding.
Yep. It was a great day. I want to say two things off this letter. One, the letter writer will be happy to know that we have talked to my son about Santa Claus. We did something similar. We were like, hey, this is the truth, but... other kids like it, so don't say things about it. One time we were walking to school, he saw, it was like a deflated Santa that in front of someone's lawn. And he was like, oh, I guess Santa died. And I was like, no, no, that's just a deflated thing. And he goes, Dad, why do they believe in Santa since he's not real, like God? And I was like, okay, this is a bigger conversation. Hold on a second. And the other thing I want to say is his vasectomy story reminds me of when I had a kidney stone and I was just sitting at home watching movies because I was in such pain. And I watched From Beyond and I was like, this movie really gets how I'm feeling right now. Because it was like goopy and people's bodies were getting destroyed. I was like, oh, finally, someone's telling my story.
Yeah, kind of like a farewell to the flesh type moment.
Exactly. Oh, I wish I could have said farewell to the flesh.
Mm-hmm. Probably watch Romancing the Stone as well.
Oh, yeah, I watch all Stone movies. Romancing the Stone, Give Me movies Shelter. With Sharon Stone.
The Family Stone.
The Rolling Stones, yeah. Yeah, the Family Stone, yeah. All that stuff, yeah.
So this is a point in the podcast where we recommend movies, movies that we actually enjoyed, movies you should see probably instead of The Fanatic.
I'm going to say, I'm just going to go out, this is a guess, I don't know what you guys are all going to recommend, but I'm going to say definitely instead of The Fanatic.
Yeah. All right. I guess I'll kick it off. There's a movie I watched recently, I think it was on Shudder that I saw it, it's called Strange Behavior. AKA Dead Kids is the other name for that movie. And it was directed by Michael Laughlin, and it was written by Bill Condon and Michael Laughlin. Bill Condon, you might know, went on to do Gods and Monsters, Chicago, other stuff. And it's an Aussie horror film. You know I like my Ozploitation.
And I do know that.
It's a kind of a mashup of the serial killer, or slasher rather, and mad scientist genres, where there are scientists in the small town performing mysterious experiments that are doing lead to killings, let's say. I don't want to spoil too much of the film. But, you know, it's... I don't want to oversell it, but if you have like a fondness for, you know, B movies from the '80s that are made with a little more craft than they needed to be made with, and there's then this is for you. There's some very creative filming and staging of some of the suspense sequences. So, Strange Behavior is my recommendation. Anyone else?
I I just did some traveling. You know. Went down to Florida to visit my folks, and I watched some movies on my trip. I have a tendency to watch movies on planes that have an accidentally large amount of nudity. That's always fun. I like getting...
Classic bit.
I like it when random guys slap me in the arm and give me a thumbs up while I'm trying to hunch over my laptop to prevent anyone from seeing...
As you're watching Irreversible.
Yeah, to keep people from seeing all my shame, like the movie shame. But this time I made a point not to watch it on a plane. I watched the movie I Am Love, directed by Luca Guadagnino, who is probably one of my favorite directors working right now. This is one of his earlier films, starring Tilda Swinton, and it's about a young woman, well, a mother of three, who has a Russian woman who's married into an Italian a wealthy Italian family, and the family is both dealing with business changes and also some turbulent personal things. And like a lot of his movies, it's basically like a lush feast of a movie. It's beautiful. It's very physical. It's got a, let's say, very present score and some really great performances from Tilda Swinton and the rest of the cast. I found it beautiful and moving.
I'd like to, Cinnamon Boy would like to recommend, I'm sure this might have been recommended before, I didn't get a chance to look through your whole back catalog, but I'm going to Japan in a few weeks, and I'm going to go to the Ghibli Museum, Ghibli, and I watched Grave of the Fireflies.
Yeah.
And, don't watch this if you're having a bad day, but if you're if you're bulletproof.
But if you're having a good day, that's the time
that's
to watch
to ruin it.
It.
It is beautiful. It's so sad, but it's set during World War II in Japan. It's about a young boy and his kid sister who kind of lose everything and have to fend for themselves and the trials and tribulations they go through. The voice acting is incredible. Subs over dubs always. And it's just beautifully done, and it's a very incredible, touching, incredibly story.
Have you watched any? I remember when I bought like the DVD years ago, and there were some supplementary materials where they were like talking to the director and the author of the story, and his takeaway was so much different than my takeaway. He was like shocked that people felt sympathy for the characters when he's like, clearly what they're doing was wrong, and I'm like, what is happening? Oh man, what a good movie.
That's a great segue for my movie, which is also a difficult to watch film about World War II, but this time in the European theater. I recently saw the movie Come and See, which is a Russian, or you could say Belarusian, movie from 1985 about a young man who lives in a village in Belarus and decides against his mother's wishes to join the Soviet partisans, or I guess they're Soviet, the partisans fighting the Nazis, and finds that the war is so much more horrifying than he thought it would be. And it's a really, like, amazingly powerful, but also, like, difficult to watch movie. But it goes to a place at the end that I found, there are certain points where I'm like, yeah, war is terrible. Like, I understand, it's really hitting you hard. But the way they do certain things and the way where the movie goes to at the end is very surprising and strange and something that I did not expect or see coming, but which really moved me in the end. I mentioned moved earlier about iPodius. I was also moved watching this. But it's a movie to watch, like, with a knowing that you're going to watch something that's going to make you uncomfortable and not happy.
So yeah, but pop up a big bucket of popcorn.
Eat some B12.
Get the family together. It's a great first date movie. And just be ready for incredibly powerful terror. That's Come and See.
Okay. So that's our show, guys. Thank you to our guests for being here. Do you want to thank our guests, Stuart?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for joining us, Adel.
Use my real name. Cinema Boy.
I'm so sorry. Cinema Boy, thank you for joining us.
And remind us again, where can we find you outside of this podcast, Cinema Boy?
Yeah, you can find me on the podcast, How's It Going from the Magic Tavern? And Hey Riddle Riddle, which is a new podcast I do.
If you just Google funniest podcast, right?
Famously, yes. Yeah. Absolutely. That's how Rachel Bloom found us. But yeah, check those out. Hey Riddle Riddle and Hello from the Magic Tavern. And you can find me on Twitter at @AdelRafi, spelled how it sounds.
Great. Our show is on the Maximum Fun Podcast Network, home to many great podcasts. Go out and check it out. Comedy and culture, yada, yada.
Yep, yada, yada. tweet about us. Greet about us. Fleet about us.
Give us good reviews on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts from. And thank you very much for listening.
And Randy, where can we find you? Do you have anything to plug?
Well, I'm all sorts of places, like Pixar movies, or maybe you just see me down at a diner, probably ordering a side of fries. That's enough for me. I don't need a Phil's meal. I had a big breakfast. But you know, guys, it's interesting to say, sometimes when you're singing, the words get in your way, and you just gotta go like this.
Careful. Careful, Randy. Careful.
And what is it? Guys, you got a friend in me.
Yeah, stuck the landing.
Bro, no. All
right. Well,
I'll say this episode was created with the help of Jordan Cowling from Maximum Fun. Mm-hmm. And Dan, is there anything else we'd like to say? Or
any Flophouse
so
housekeeping?
It, right?
Nope, that's it.
Okay.
Send us a letter if you want, and maybe Randy Newman will sing about it sometime. Well, I don't make promises. I'm a busy guy. I just happened to stop by today. Uh-huh. Oh, no, I rhymed in the middle instead of at the end. Yeah, sorry, Randy. Uh-huh.
Guys, I just realized in that drawing at the end when John Travolta has the eye patch and the hook and he grows wings, uh-huh, he turns into the Angel Michael.
Oh, and so it's a prequel to Michael. Mm-hmm.
That makes a lot of sense. It sounds like a real phenomenon.
Broken Arrow. All right, guys. See you next time. Bye.
We will be staying alive. Bye. And Oscar Isaac is Duke Leto Atreides.
Uh-huh.
Zendaya is Channy.
Mm-hmm.
And Michi.
But it doesn't say who's going to play Faye Ruth, though.
Definitely, yeah, definitely Michi still.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.